So as it turns out, we know a lot more about the Russian hack than you think we know. Or at least Greg Miller does. The national security reporter and Pulitzer Prize winner has looked into the Russian election hack. His book, The Apprentice, is amazing. Each page is filled with anecdotes you don't know about, or ones that you kind of know about, but in detail you did not think possible. Who cracked into the DNC from Moscow? Here's the name. He's actually got the name of the person that in Russia hacked into the Democratic National Committee. And exactly how did they do that? He's got it. The details of John Podesta's compromise make you laugh in dismay. Podesta got one of those fake you need to change your password emails from Google. He didn't need to change it. It was the Russians. But his people clicked, and now the Russians had 50,000 Hillary Clinton email. And when the FBI figured some of this out, they called the Democratic National Committee. You've probably heard about this too, but it's still maddening. The FBI was put onto the IT help desk at the DNC. And that person there really didn't believe them. So it was 8 months of the Russians looking into the Clinton campaign and the DNC before anybody took it seriously enough. So as not to give themselves away when they were posting on websites and blogs, Miller says the Russians watched House of Cards to brush up on their American political lingo. How did WikiLeaks get the data? And what special kind of train wreck was Paul Manafort, the sobbing, nearly broke, in therapy con who became Trump's campaign manager? It's all there. Oh, and hello, George Papadopoulos. Nice to meet you. There's the who, what, why, where, and when of Christopher Steele. The story starts with a computer ping in the Netherlands and ends not far away with a bizarre press conference in Finland. You remember Helsinki? Greg Miller's on the phone. Greg, you're on WGN in Chicago. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks very much.
I think rather than interview you, I'm just going to read your book on the air now.
Could I get the script you were just using? Because that was awesome.
The book, it really is that. And it seems like every day there's a new development. In fact, before we just go into the details of the stuff that you uncovered, I wanted to ask you if you thought you saw any parallel between the relationship between Turkey and Saudi Arabia and Russia and the United States. In that, in the book, you say sometimes when the Americans see the Russians clicking around on a White House server or Defense Department server, they don't immediately tell them or anybody. They watch to see what they're doing, what they're knowing, what they do with that information. Where does it surface on the other end? And it sort of sounds like maybe the Turks had the same sort of relationship with the Saudis at the embassy, right?
Isn't it interesting? I mean, what we've learned, most of what we've learned over the past couple of weeks about the murder of my colleague at the Post, Jamal Khashoggi, we've learned because Turkey wants us to learn, and we're learning stuff that Turkey knew from the very beginning. It's an interesting insight into the capabilities of a formidable intelligence service like the Turks have. And they have been just sort of using it in a drip, drip, drip way to go right after Saudi Arabia, who is a regional and religious rival for the government of Turkey.
And it's possible they would have a video or an audio, but they don't want to say that because then the Saudis know that they have a plant or that they're monitoring them somehow.
You know, there's another parallel here or another connection I would make and tie it back to Russia, if you'll let me. It's that, you know, President Trump and his reaction to this, it's so much like the way he has reacted to Putin, you know, always sort of listening to Putin, giving Putin the benefit of the doubt, Putin's strong denials that Russia did anything in 2016. We've heard Trump use almost exactly the same language in connection with the Saudi claims about the murder of Khashoggi.
Well, I understand how Saudi Arabia is a regional player of importance, and there may even be financial ties between the Kushner and Trump families and some people in Saudi Arabia, but really, why are they so hesitant to call out these bad actors?
It's one of the, you know, biggest mysteries about this administration. But I think that the most compelling kind of argument or case is that it does come back to sort of these financial connections. Trump tried to tweet a week or so ago that he has no financial interests in Saudi Arabia, but that was a pretty carefully worded statement. We know that a lot of his properties, a lot of Trump condominiums and Trump towers, a lot of things have been purchased by wealthy, wealthy Saudis, and oligarchs from Russia, and those are deep, deep connections that are hidden, that Trump has tried to keep hidden, but that help us to understand his behavior toward the autocrats in those governments.
Well, it would be a shame if it was that mercenary, but he says it's more for the country, right? That, in fact, we would lose a significant arms buyer if we, say, cut off arms sales to Saudi Arabia. I hear those numbers are a little suspicious, but I wonder if you'd comment on that angle of the story.
His numbers are exaggerated. It's certainly true that Saudi Arabia buys large numbers of arms from the United States, has used some of America's weapons in its ongoing campaign of destruction in Yemen, a very bloody and devastating conflict now stretching on for 4 years. But, I mean, ultimately what you're saying then is that these arms sales matter more than the principles that the United States is supposed to stand for, including freedom of the press, freedom in general. If you're willing to say that we need to protect those arms sales and tolerate the killing of a Saudi dissident.
Did the Russians aid the Trump campaign specifically? Do we know that that was an objective of theirs?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. There is no doubt about it. I think there was only a few people who would argue that point now, and those are include the president and a few of his closest relatives. But no, I mean, we've known that for a year, and the evidence just gets stronger and stronger. In fact, you now know, I think we're much closer to being able to say that it was not just Russian interference seeking to help Trump, but that it had a big impact. We now know, we didn't know then, we now know that Facebook, for example, has learned that more than 126 million Facebook users in the United States saw Russian propaganda, pro-Trump propaganda in 2016. This is in an election where only 130 million Americans voted.
Yeah, but that's different than did they help them directly. For instance, you could lob that stuff, make posts about terror or race or things that agitate Americans. But I'm asking you, did they reach out to the Trump campaign and say, what buzzwords should we use or how can we help you?
I misunderstood your question. I think that they attempted to. I think that there's still some argument over the purpose and nature of the Trump Tower meeting. I think there was a lot of interaction between the Trump campaign and Russia that was out in the open, a lot of signaling of messaging and so forth that they were reacting to. And I don't think there's any question based on, you know, the conclusions of U.S. intelligence agencies that Russia was trying to help Donald Trump. But whether there's a smoking gun sort of explicit memo articulating an agreement to throw the election, we haven't seen that yet, and maybe Robert Mueller has.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious about where the Mueller investigation is right now. Do you have any insight on that?
It's really hard to have much insight into it. Mueller has kept such a lid on his activities, but the impression I get is that there is just a lot of pent-up movement. We're waiting for the midterm elections to finish, and then I think we're going to see a flurry of activity from Robert Mueller. I think we're going to see more indictments, and I think he's going to he is very close to coming down the home stretch with his report.
Do you think he has some sort of spectacular finish?
I think that it's inevitable that it will be spectacular. Whether it is, like, as I said, some kind of holy cow revelatory thing that we have had no glimpse of until now, or just the accumulated detail that he's been able to amass over the past year and a half. I mean, each indictment that we've seen from Robert Mueller has told us so much about this plot, so much about the criminality of people like Paul Manafort. I mean, they've been astonishing in their level of detail, and I fully expect that that will be true in the end.
But Trump's team, the president himself particularly, may have just been the unwitting beneficiaries of Russian malfeasance, right? It's not like, except for that dang meeting, that bizarre meeting they had in Trump Tower, we really don't have any evidence that there was any collusion. Would you agree with that?
I think I can come close to agreeing with that, but I would quibble with it in a couple ways. I think that to say that they're not aware of the effort that Russia was making would mean overlooking the approach that they got about that Trump Tower meeting and the way they handled it. It also, I mean, when we talk about collusion, we now know that For instance, when Trump says, Russia, if you're listening, Russia, in fact, was listening and launched a spear phishing attack on Hillary Clinton's servers within hours. So the fact that some of this happens out in the open as opposed to hidden kind of emails or encrypted channels makes it hard for us to process. And then the Trump team tried to make good, right? You have Mike Flynn, Trump's first national security advisor, promising Russia, basically, in a secret phone call in December 2016, sit tight, don't worry about these sanctions that Obama's slapping on you. We're going to take care of you very soon. So there is aspects of a quid pro quo when you look at it that way.
It was a hell of a statement that he made when he said, Russia, if you're listening. And, you know, that's the president just being flip. We will never know how seriously to take this guy. But maybe the Russians took it seriously. Do you think that they actually then released those email or, you know, initiated their cooperation with WikiLeaks when he said that? Was that them listening literally?
I think that they were absolutely reacting to Trump's behavior. They were following the race very closely, and they were sort of directing their activity, whether it was their disinformation through American social media platforms or the releases of emails, with almost exquisite timing. And, you know, aspects of this plot were very crude, right? Very clunky, very clumsy, a lot of misspellings in a lot of the fake info that they were pumping into Facebook. But on other areas, they were paying close attention and actually manipulating things pretty well.
When they make the movie, by the way, has this book been optioned?
We've been in some conversations with Hollywood, but no deal yet. But I hope that does happen. I think it is. I think that that's an amazing story. It's an amazing story in American history, and it's just sort of one of those, as you were saying at the outset of this conversation, there are moments in this that are almost like when you're watching a horror film and the main character doesn't see a danger around the corner, and you kind of want to scream at the screen, "What in the hell?"
Well, I thought this moment was cinematic, and it was tiny, but you could just see this in the movie. So there's 80 Wall Street Journal reporters all packed into a hotel that they've completely rented out for the convention. And the TV is on, and they're all in a dining area grabbing their breakfast and rolls before they go off to cover the stories they're going to cover on the campaign and the Republican National Convention. And nobody's really paying attention to Trump yammering up on the TV there. But then he says that. He says, and Russia, if you're listening, release the email. The American media will treat you well if you do it. And the room goes silent. And somebody looks up and says, holy bleep. Like, oh my God, that just happened. And now he has their attention. And I never, you know, we all remember when that happened and we thought it was more bluster, but who knows? Maybe that was really a turning point or the point at which they ratcheted up their intrusion into the election.
And it was absolutely a turning point in terms of our coverage for us at the Washington Post and I'm sure other news organizations. Because, I mean, you're right. There was an attitude at that time like, oh, this Russia stuff seems like a lot of it's made up. It seems like a lot of sour grapes from the Clinton team. They're exaggerating what's going on here. But then when Trump utters those words in public, it just sort of snapped your head around. You just kind of feel like, did he really just say that? And only a year later did we learn from Mueller that, as we said a moment ago, Russia was listening and responding.
You know, I think a question for a lot of people, too, on a phone line, by the way, we're visiting with the author of the book, The Apprentice. It's about the Russian hack into the 2016 election. Pulitzer Prize winner Greg Miller from Washington Post is on the line. I think the name everybody wants to know the truth about, like, what is this guy, is Christopher Steele and the Steele dossier. Give me your 411 on that after this. Among the texts, John, the Saudis have been major funders of terrorism for decades. Every president has ignored them. This issue is not exclusive to Trump. From 847, oh my God, John Williams got a real haircut. So handsome. Yes, you can watch us online. And this one from 630, John, can you ask your guest if the Russian interference was because they knew that Donald Trump would be so divisive it would put the U.S. in turmoil? We're wrapping up an interview with Greg Miller. His book is The Apprentice. It's about the Russian hack. Give me short answers to two questions. That last one first. Is that why they did it? Did they like Donald Trump in the election because they knew he'd just make us all nuts?
That's a great question from your listener, and that listener is spot on. I mean, that was their first objective in their interference in 2016, to make democracy look dysfunctional in the United States, to give us a big black eye, to hurt Hillary Clinton. Electing somebody who loves Vladimir Putin as much as Donald Trump was icing on the cake.
Is Christopher Steele legit?
I think he is legit. I think his work is imperfect. There are problems with it. There are gaps in it. But I do see him as an honest, kind of former British spy, deeply troubled by what he was turning up and trying to get America's attention before it was too late.
Yeah, and who hired him? Did the Republicans originally hire him and then the DNC picked him up? Walk me through
that. It's a tiny bit more complicated than that. So Republicans hired Fusion GPS, which is this opposition research company here in Washington. Republicans hired that Fusion to dig up dirt on Trump, to look into his ties to Russia. And then later, after the Republican money had run out for Fusion, they got money from the Democrats, including Hillary's campaign, and that's when they hired Christopher Steele to keep at it, to see what else he could turn up on this trail.
And I wonder if he was fabricating things or, I mean, I know he was on assignment. Did he know that Hillary Clinton was the person asking for this information?
No, I mean, based on all of their testimony, I mean, perhaps you could make an educated guess that he should have known that was the case. He knew he was being asked to look into Donald Trump as a candidate. He sort of knew the political nature of the work he was being asked to do. But he was given a very specific kind of narrow question. Help us figure out what's going on between Trump and Russia. He's been pursuing deals there for decades. He doesn't have a lot to show for it. He says a lot of weird things about Russia. What's going on?
I'm glad that you closed the book with that bizarre press conference in Helsinki, because that was just one of the, I would say, most unfortunate moments of the last 2 years. And I guess it's a logical place to stop. But you'll have to update this book in future editions, right, Greg?
I think I will, and I think we're going to learn a lot more very soon. I think the Russia headlines are going to be coming back with a vengeance in a matter of weeks.
Greg Miller is the national security correspondent at the Washington Post, Pulitzer Prize winner. His latest is The Apprentice. Nice to talk to you. Good work, Greg.
Thank you.
That's Greg Miller from the Washington Post.